from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, sparks fly in the House of Delegates as members attempt to make changes to a bill that protects religious freedoms. And delegates begin debating a piece of legislation that would require an ID to vote. Senators want to get rid of a tax that would leave a budget hole in the Division of Forestry. And State Superintendent of Schools Dr. Michael Martirano joins us to discuss the legislature's focus on education. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Members of the House considered amendments for yet another controversial bill today, a bill supporters say will protect West Virginians from government infringement on their religious beliefs. But debate over the Religious Freedom Restoration Act extended beyond the bill itself into the powers of the Speaker of that chamber. Rob Engel reports.
When members of the House took to the floor Wednesday morning, they had four amendments to House Bill 4012 to consider. The bill is West Virginia's Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It creates a judicial test for lawsuits against the state or government entities to ensure the protections of an individual's, quote, sincerely held religious beliefs, end quote. Two of the amendments offered Wednesday by Democratic members of the body were ruled irrelevant and never made it to a vote. But minority members took issue with House Speaker Tim Armstead's ruling on the relevancy of one amendment in particular, claiming the Speaker has consistently blocked Democratic amendments on the floor this session. Barbara Fleshauer is from Monongalia County.
What I'm trying to talk about is the importance of the ability on second reading to be able to amend a bill. And every ruling that has been challenged this year of attempting to amend a bill has been not germane. I think we have strayed far beyond the purpose of germaneness is not to prevent all amendments. And what I was trying to explain was this is a very important amendment that goes to the center of the bill.
The Speaker, however, took issue with the claim and came down from the podium to address members of the chamber.
Yes, we all have very strong feelings and emotions about certain things that we debate on this floor. And yes, we feel strongly that we should be able to have a particular issue brought in front of us. But there are rules to this process that we must follow, and follow those rules whether we agree, whether it's an issue that's particularly, you know, we feel passionate about or not. The rules are the rules of this House.
An amendment by Democrats Isaac Spinagle and Mike Pushkin, however, was considered by the body. Delegate Spinagle explains the amendment protects local EDNA ordinances, which prohibit discrimination in housing and employment based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
By doing this language, it strengthens and protects the local EDNA ordinances that have been implemented throughout the state, and it just leaves it primarily to the state action rather than affecting local municipalities.
House Judiciary Chair John Schott was against the change, saying the intent of the bill is to protect West Virginians from an infringement on their rights by all levels of government, not just the state.
So removing the word local basically exempts from that protection actions that local governments seek to take.
The Democratic amendment was voted down. Chairman Schott offered the final amendment to the bill. His amendment removes an individual's ability to seek compensatory damages in a lawsuit filed under the proposed law. Those damages are meant to reward someone for the harm the wrongdoer did to them. The amendment was adopted and the provision was removed. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act will be up for a final vote in the House Thursday. For the legislature today, I'm Rob Engel in the House.
Members of the House are also considering a bill to change voting requirements in West Virginia. As Liz McCormick reports, the House Judiciary Committee discussed the bill at length today that would require voters to show a photo ID before casting a ballot.
For 2 hours this morning, the House Judiciary Committee discussed House Bill 4013, which would require a person in West Virginia who desires to vote to present a valid photo ID at the polls. Those in support of this bill say it will help keep the voting system honest and avoid voter fraud. But those who oppose it say it impedes the constitutional right to vote, citing concerns that the more steps a person has to take, they're less likely to make the effort to vote. Delegate Patrick Lane of Kanawha County is the vice chair of the House Judiciary Committee and the lead sponsor of the bill. He says he doesn't think the requirement of a photo ID will pose any issues.
There haven't been any widespread problems with it. There's not been people turned away. If there have been problems, they've been dealt with on election day. And I would just suggest that the fact that we have in the language an opportunity for a person who shows up at the poll without an ID to continue the process and cast their ballot on a provisional ballot ensures that everyone will be able to vote if they are a registered voter.
Lawmakers heard from Dave Nichols, the legislative liaison with the Secretary of State, the chief elections officer. Delegate Sean Fluharty, a Democrat from Ohio County, brought up a concern to Nichols about the time in which this legislation would be enacted.
Do you know the effective date for this legislation?
It appears to me as though it would be, unless something were to change, would be effective 90 days from passage, which would probably put us, making it effective for the general election of 2016.
And how would that impact upon your office?
I think it would be very difficult and maybe even potentially confusing for voters to have one process for the primary and a different process for the general election.
Delegate Patrick Lane said he is sensitive to when the voter ID law would take effect if enacted into law and should be changed.
I would expect that the committee will move its application to the 2018 election cycle rather than 2016. Personally, I've always been reluctant to make changes to election law during an election year. And so I would expect that amendment would be forthcoming and then would expect it to be adopted by the committee.
Members of the House Judiciary Committee continued discussion over this bill and its amendments into the afternoon. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
The discussion of amendments to the voter ID bill lasted late into the afternoon today. One revision allows college and university students to use their valid school ID to vote. The bill now heads back to the full chamber for its consideration. As a part of his plan to balance both the 2016 and 2017 budgets, Governor Tomlin is asking lawmakers to use a portion of the state's severance tax dedicated to paying off old debts. But in July of this year, Tomlin wants that tax to go away, providing some relief to the struggling coal and natural gas industries. Members of the Senate, however, want to extend that relief to another industry, timber.
Reductions.
Senate Bill 419 was introduced on behalf of Governor Tomlin. He presented the bill to lawmakers as a part of his budget plan during his State of the State address. In 2005, West Virginia lawmakers implemented an additional severance tax on the coal, natural gas, and timber industries. That tax was part of a negotiated package to pay off the state's workers' compensation debt, payments made to employees who've been injured on the job. As a part of that deal, lawmakers promised to remove the extra tax once the debt was paid off, and Tomlin says that day has come. He wants to divert the money from the current tax collections to balance the 2016 budget and then allow the tax for coal and natural gas to expire in June.
By accelerating this final payment, we can remove additional severance taxes on our coal and natural gas industries, providing much-needed relief to help them invest in our state and employ West Virginia workers.
Wednesday, senators amended the governor's bill to also allow the tax to expire for the timber industry, one Natural Resources Committee Chair Robert Karn says is also struggling.
While Senate Bill 419 has, I believe, a worthy goal, given our current fiscal situation in the state, that we're sort of pulling money in from different directions to make sure that we can meet our financial obligations into the general fund, I don't believe that as part of that goal it's appropriate to include a tax increase that really more than doubles the level of taxation, the timber severance tax. Certainly that's something that could be discussed by this body, but I don't believe that that properly belongs in this bill.
Senators on both sides of the aisle approve the amendment. The tax, however, is dedicated to funding the Division of Forestry. Should the bill pass both chambers, including the tax break for the timber industry, lawmakers will need to plug a more than $2 million budget hole for the division.
Sue Klein is a Republican from Wyoming County. She was appointed to the Senate by Governor Tomlin in January. Klein's appointment came after a West Virginia Supreme Court decision following the resignation of former Senator Daniel Hall. Rick Moy was elected to the House of Delegates in 2006. A Democrat, he represents the 29th District from Raleigh County. Delegate Moy serves as the minority chair of the Political Subdivisions Committee and the minority vice chair of the Committees on Education and Senior Issues. Mick Bates represents the state's 30th House of Delegates district. Elected in 2014, he's a Democrat from Raleigh County. Delegate Bates serves as the minority vice chair of the House Insurance Committee. Bates is a native of Australia, but a naturalized U.S. citizen. Lynn Arvon is a Republican from Raleigh County. She represents the state's 31st House of Delegates district from Raleigh County. Delegate Arvon was elected in 2012 and serves as the vice chair of the House Government Organization Committee.
Between a repeal of the Common Core-based education standards, a proposal to create charter schools, a cut in the school aid formula, and teacher layoffs, it's a busy time in education in West Virginia. Here to discuss all of these issues is the man overseeing the state's education system, Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Michael Martorano. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
We need to start with Common Core. Lawmakers called for a repeal of these standards in West Virginia last year, but that bill didn't pass. And you decided to go ahead and take on a review of those standards anyways. Can you tell me, what did you all do?
In a nutshell, we heard there were concerns with the standards. I wanted to operate in a very transparent manner. We took it to our citizens. We posted all of our standards in both reading language arts and mathematics, and we asked for a review in terms of, tell us what the concerns are. Tell us the ones that you like. Give us the feedback for improvement. And we worked with WVU and Marshall University, and we were able to pull together a very solid set of recommendations, 100 recommendations that improved our standards that were already high quality. The learning progressions in terms of reading, language, arts, and math, what young people are expected to know and learn. And I made a series of recommendations to the state board. They repealed the Next Gen standards, the Common Core standards, and we've readopted them now as the West Virginia College and Career Ready standards. In a nutshell, we've included things that have more rigor, more developmentally aligned. We've included cursive handwriting. We've included an explicit inclusion of multiplication tables. And to further expand on mathematics, the inclusion of calculus as a set of additional rigor. So when a young person completes calculus, they'll truly be ready for college. So I firmly believe that we have some of the highest rated standards in the United States. And after this review that was led by our teachers and feedback from our citizens, the experts of which I listen to are our teachers, they're in great shape.
So the West Virginia College and Career Ready standards are set to be implemented in the fall of 17, that school year. Since the review process, though, you've still received some criticism from members of the legislature. A delegate stopped me today and said, I see that Dr. Martorano is on the show tonight. Can you ask him this for me? He said, some changes were made to formatting, from paragraphs to bullet points, and they called that a change to the standard. He said, can you respond to those concerns from lawmakers that not that many substantive changes were made to the standards themselves?
And I think that's a wonderful question. I've been saying that all along during this process. The standards are developmentally based upon research in terms of mathematics and reading language arts. There's a developmental progression. What young people are expected to know and learn by the end of a grade level, by the end of a course. You just don't start by entering the quadratic equation and introducing that in kindergarten. You start with the aspect of understanding cardinal, ordinal, and nominal numbers, how to count from 1 to 100. There's only so many ways that you can say that a young person needs to count from 1 to 100 by the end of kindergarten or by the end of first grade. There's a developmental progression for that to occur. So we looked at that. There's that level of compatibility between standards. If I were to bring all the standards from all the states forward in the United States, there would be an 80 to 90% level of compatibility because they're developmentally aligned based upon research by the National Math Council for teachers, and the same thing for our reading in terms of English. So I'm glad that individuals recognize that. What we've done is strengthen that. We've developmentally aligned it. We've made certain that there are critical thinking skills, problem-solving skills to prepare young people for college and careers. Our standards before were rated low because there wasn't that direct link to higher education. So when a young person graduates with a diploma, and you know I'm all about improving the graduation rate, is to ensure that when a child receives a diploma in West Virginia, it means something. It's at a high level of rigor. That young person can go into a credit-bearing course in college. So truly, that is a fantastic question, and I'm glad it was asked because there is already a level of compatibility. We've just taken it higher and made it very clear and distinctive.
Well, Superintendent, some of the delegates have taken these criticisms even further. One member of the House went as far last week as saying that you should be impeached over the handling of these town halls and the standard rewrites. Do you have a response to him?
Well, and I was greatly disappointed in that conversation. That personalizes the issue. We know we're doing good work on behalf of children, and we're doing it in a very transparent manner. We listen to our citizens, and we want to make certain that we're doing it based upon the experts that we're listening to as far as our teachers. What we're about is improving education for our young people, and we need to make certain that young people are graduating college and career ready standards, and college and career ready, and we want to make certain we have the highest standards for them to possibly compete in the 21st century. So we're doing all that we can, working together in a collaborative manner.
And the legislature is taking up a bill. It's in the House Education Committee right now to repeal the Common Core standards, which has already been done, but also to realign the testing. And you're set to speak about that bill tomorrow?
Absolutely, yes. And we want to continue. And I want the dialogue to continue. We have been extremely open, completely transparent. I've used the word several times. I just want to hear specifics that tell us what we need to do to improve. I've yet to hear that level of specificity from a number of individuals as we continue to go out there and ask for that information. So I continue to be open to those suggestions, but what I can allow to happen is for information to be presented in a way where it will destabilize education for our teachers, for our students, for our communities. This has to be done in a very thoughtful manner. And so we can't disrupt our teachers is what my main concern is.
Well, let's talk about those teachers. Fayette County, Boone County, McDowell County, as well as some others, have announced that they'll cut positions within their school system for a number of reasons. Budgeting issues is a lot of it. Also a loss in student population. Their number of their students are down. But you also talk about the number of vacancies in West Virginia classrooms. Talk to me about how those two issues relate.
Well, the reality is right now, across our state, we have 600 vacancies. And if we're truly about academic achievement, we need to do everything that we can to put a quality teacher in front of our children every day. So I'm asking for the support from our legislature, from our community, to assist in our salaries for our teachers, for our benefits for our teachers, because we're competing against other states who are basically recruiting our teachers every day. At the same time, we're experiencing a budget crunch. There is no question about the economic crisis that our state is experiencing, and our local superintendents have to right-size their organization with the finances. They cannot continue to run the same number of teachers and personnel based upon a diminished budget. So there's a balancing act that's occurring right now. Many of our superintendents are right-sizing their organization, but we can't push our teachers out of our state. We have to keep them, and we have to fill those vacancies. So the challenges of our budget, contained with the fact of our vacancies, is creating a very perfect storm for us in terms of challenges.
Well, the budgeting issue, you know, this year was the first time that the state, at least in your tenure, in my tenure covering the legislature, has gone for a 1% cut in the school aid formula. Can you tell me what does that mean at the local level when something like that is reduced?
Devastating. You know, when there's already a decrease in terms of enrollment and decrease in resources, and for the first time in the history of our state, I had to communicate a 1% cut mid-year to our superintendents that are already operating under a very tight budget. What that did was place a number of our counties on the watch list for a deficit at the end of the year. Over 12 counties have been placed on this watch list. Creates great challenges as we're talking about the need for the resources. So it's a very, very disturbing aspect for me to have to communicate that.
Well, as I sit in these State Board of Education meetings every month and we talk about counties that are on that watch list for financial issues, inevitably those counties start having issues in other areas. And then the State Board of Education has to step in and take over those counties. Should those counties on that watch list be concerned that the state is going to have to take over?
Yeah, I think everybody needs to be concerned right now. What we're asking our superintendents to do is do everything that you can to right-size your organization. Make certain that we're not extending in terms of personnel. Make certain that we're not extending in terms of buying curricular materials. Making certain that we are really, truly operating on a very conservative nature. Because if your finances start getting out of control, it just creates a domino effect. It creates a domino effect in terms of concerns as far as how dollars are spent, the delivery of programs, and it can create problems as far as then for us at the state in terms of the ultimate accountability body for the management of those that we could have to possibly take them over. And that's something that we don't want to do, but we want to provide that assistance.
You know, when we talk about budgetary concerns, though, we have to talk about issues that have come up in the past at the legislature about the size of the State Department here in Charleston. Is there anywhere left to cut that you see in the Department of Education here in Charleston at the state level?
And it's another wonderful question, and again, in a very transparent manner, we have cut up the department staff. When you break that staffing down, there are 247 employees that oversee $2.5 billion budget for the educational system. There's 247 staff members in the department. That has been reduced over the last several years by 60. We're operating on a very tight level because the expectation of work continues to increase from the expectations from the federal government for accountability, the oversight of those $2.5 billion, the delivery, the accountability, the food and nutrition. We have to have individuals who oversee that. So I've reorganized the department. We have cut additional positions this year from last year so that we have a very efficient, streamlined organization. But the reality is the work still needs to occur. There's still that level of accountability as far as work. The work hasn't been diminished at a time when there's been a cut in terms of staff. So we have cut that staff, and I will continue to look for efficiencies as we move forward.
I want to take the last few minutes that we have to talk about a county school system that's really struggling, and that's Fayette County. We know that they are having issues with facilities. They have some schools that have been condemned, and students are no longer even in their own buildings. What the State Board of Education met today. What is the latest on Fayette County?
Well, and I want to start, you know, by stating that I have visited all 55 counties in our great state, and I have seen some of the most phenomenal facilities I've ever seen in my career. But I have to admit that some of the most challenging facilities that I've ever seen in my entire 30-plus year career are in Fayette County. Five facilities come to mind where young people are being educated in facilities that I wouldn't want any of my friends or individuals of anybody to be in those schools. So it causes a great concern. We have to do better by children. This is an issue that's been going on for many, many years. Today, the State Board came together with representatives from the SBA, with the local...
The State School Building Authority,
excuse me,
I should say.
Yes, the School Building Authority, to have conversations about how we're going to solve this problem. My concern is that we have another funding cycle that will be coming up later in this year, October, November. We have 8 months to develop a plan so that we are prepared to be in line for those funds necessary to improve the facilities in Fayette County. Because my concern is this is not just a Fayette County concern, it's a West Virginian concern because we have children in facilities that are less than what we'd expect any of our kids to be educated in.
In that amount of time, can you all come up with a plan?
I'm extremely hopeful. I've put the expectation out there. Our state board is committed. The school building authority is committed. The local community is committed. We've got to come together and make certain that we are doing this in the best interest of our children. That's the bottom line. We've got to do right by kids. That's what I work for every day are our 277,000 young people in our state to improve the educational quality, and we've got to do better by our kids in Fayette County.
Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Michael Martorano, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yesterday, the United States Supreme Court ordered a stay in a case led by West Virginia, challenging the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan. The granted stay means the implementation of the carbon reduction rules are essentially put on hold. That is until a lower appeals court decides if the Federal Environmental Protection Agency has overstepped its bounds by putting forth the rules in the first place. Tomorrow on our show, Attorney General Patrick Morrissey joins us to discuss the case and other legislative issues. This has been The Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for The Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.